week this week, I've went back and forth on what to share. I wanted to share about baptism because that's what we're going to do. And I went back and forth of whether to share about that or to continue with the miracles. And I was really torn. And the more that I tried to move towards preaching on baptism or just that was kind of the way I was thinking and way I wanted to go, the more I just felt drawn back to Matthew chapter 8 and talking about the miracle that happens at the end of Matthew chapter 8. And there's actually two miracles that are kind of connected in at the end of Matthew chapter 8. And so today we're going to look at those, and this miracles are also recorded in Mark chapter 5 and Luke chapter 8, and we're going to visit all three of those passages. So just be ready. But Matthew chapter 8, verse 24, it says, "Suddenly a fierce storm struck the lake with waves, breaking into the boat, but Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, shouting, 'Lord, save us, we're going to drown.' And Jesus responded, 'Why are you afraid? You have so little faith.' Then he got up and rebuked the wind and the waves, and suddenly there was this great calm. The disciples were amazed. 'Who is this man?' they asked. 'Even the winds and the waves obey him.' And when Jesus arrived on the other side of the lake in the region of Gadaris, two men who were possessed with demons met him. They came out of the tombs and were so violent that no one could go through that area. They began screaming at him, 'Why are you interfering with us, Son of God? Have you come here to torture us before God's appointed time?' There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding in the distance. So the demons begged, 'If you cast us out, send us into the herd of pigs.' 'All right, go,' Jesus commanded them. So the demons came out of the men and entered the pigs, and the whole herd plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and drowned in the water. The herdsmen fled to the nearby towns, telling everyone what happened to the demon-possessed men. And then the entire town came out to meet Jesus, but they begged him to go away and leave them alone." When you're looking at this passage, there's really two miracles in one. And if you break it down, there could be two totally separate stories. But the pre-miracle to the miracle was Jesus and his disciples, who were trained boaters, by the way. They're fishermen by trade. They found themselves in a storm. And it says in verse 23, he got into the boat and it started across the lake with his disciples. And suddenly a fierce storm struck the lake. And the waves are breaking into the boat. But what was Jesus doing? He was taking a nap. I have this picture of him getting on the boat. And he sees the waves and he said, "I think I'm just going to go take a nap. I'll see you guys later." And he goes down and he starts taking a nap. And this tells me something. You can sleep through all kinds of stuff. When you got a clear conscience, you don't have nothing to worry about. You can sleep through a lot of things. But he's down there and he's sleeping in the boat. And the guys up top are freaking out. They're like, "We're going to die. We're there bailing water. The boat's getting tossed around." And Jesus is taking a nap. The storm is threatening to capsize or sink the boat, and they have to go wake him up, and they're like, "Don't you care if we drown?" And when I'm reading this, in my mind, I'm seeing Jesus, and he's kind of a little bit aggravated that they woke him up, right? He's like, "What are you doing?" Like on Sunday afternoons, parents, when you just lay down, it's really starting to hit that sleep and your kid comes in there and has to tell you something that's so very important that's not really important at all. I know y'all know. And so he's like perturbed by the fact that they woke him up, and he rebukes the wind and the waves, and the water and the wind become calm. It says there was a calm. Mark 4:40 says, then he asked them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They've just experienced and seen Jesus do all these miracles up until this point. They've seen him heal people. They've seen him do the incredible. And then he gets on the boat and he's like, "You still have no faith?" I mean, the boat was only about to sink, right? They're bailing water. They're scared to death. They're still bailing water. And he's like, "You got no faith." And while they're tossing buckets of water out. gets them through the storm. He calmed the storm, and then the story shifts. The story shifts from this miracle of him calming the storm in the boat. The story shifts to him arriving at this place. And it's one of those things that the truth is truly stranger than fiction. Honestly, some of the most unbelievable stories, most bizarre things I've ever read or seen or heard are actually happened. They weren't made up. Some of the things that have happened in my life, if I told this story, people would think I was making it up. It's better than fiction, though. I can't make that stuff up. I'm not that creative. But it says in verse 28 of Matthew, it says, when Jesus arrived on the other side of the lake in the region of Gadaris, two men who were possessed by demons met him there. They came out of the tombs and were so violent that no one could go through that area. Mark and Luke only record it as one man. Matthew records it as two. And it says in Mark 5:3, it says, the man lived in the burial caves and could no longer be restrained, even with a chain. Whenever he was put into chains and shackles, as he often was, he snapped the chains from his wrist and smashed the shackles, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Day and night, he wandered around the burial caves and in the hills, howling and cutting himself with sharp stones. In Luke chapter 8, it says, as Jesus was climbing out of a boat, a man who was possessed by demons came out to meet him. For a long time, he had been homeless and naked, living in the tombs outside of the town. I'm telling you, the best stories are true stories. Who can make this stuff up? It's a homeless, naked guy who's howling at the moon in the cemetery, and nobody can chain him. They put 10 guys trying to hold him down, and he fights them all off. They need to make a movie about this. Don't leave him naked, but, you know. You can't make something that good up. This is incredible. I mean, I think about stuff that's happened to me that's bizarre, and this doesn't hold a candle. It's one of those things that the truth is so good, why make something up? This guy was howling at the moon and cutting himself and wandering around, and no one could subdue him. It took 10 men to hold him back, and he snapped chains, and everyone avoids the cemetery. They're terrified of this lunatic, this demon-possessed man, this likely tried to kill people. And I'm reading this story, and as I'm reading the story, and I know what Jesus does next, I go back and I say, this man was in Gadaris, the region. The region was known as Decapolis. It was 10 cities that were together. And this is the only time in all of Jesus' ministry that he visits this area. The only time. Every other place that he visits, that people are healed or people are changed, he goes back to multiple times. This is the only time. He cares about the one. Do you think the storm that happened just a little bit earlier was by accident? Do you think it was just happenstance? He wouldn't have gotten to the cliffs that he was at had it not been for the storm pushing the boat, Charles. They weren't going there. That's not where they were going. That's why he was so freely at the end of this chapter got back in the boat and left. Because that's not where they were headed, but that's where Jesus was headed. But because he cared about a man who was lost, who was being tormented, who was completely enchained and in bondage. He cared. He cared enough to send a storm to freak out his disciples because he knew that if he didn't, they wouldn't steer the boat the way it needed to go. But in verse 29, it says they begin, the demons began to screaming at him, why are you interfering with us, Son of God? Have you come here to torture us before God's appointed time? Matthew 5:6 says, when Jesus was still some distance away, the men saw him and ran to meet him and bowed low before him with a shriek. He screamed, why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me. I beg you not to torture me. For Jesus had already said to the spirit, come out of the man. Jesus demanded, what is your name? And he replied, "My name is Legion, because there are many inside of us." In Luke 8:28, it says, as soon as they saw Jesus, he shrieked and fell down in front of him and screamed, "Why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" And he's begging him. The demons are begging Jesus not to torture them, not to send them into the abyss, not to send them into the bottomless pit. They're begging him. They're begging him not to do that. But they all say the same thing. Every Matthew, Mark, and Luke all say that they said to him, "Why are you interfering with us? Why are you interfering?" The demons inside the man recognized Jesus, but they wanted to know why he was interfering with them. Jesus was about to interfere with their antics. And they realize what they're doing. They realize what's about to happen. And they immediately begin to beg him not to torture them. And it's also the only time that Jesus looks and says, "What's your name?" to the demon. He casts out demons throughout Scripture, throughout his ministry. You see it, and it says, "And all the crowds brought their people to him, and he healed them of disease and cast out the demons." And he goes on, and you see other stories where he did this, but this is the only time that he looked and said, "What's your name?" Jesus demanded in Luke 8:30, he demanded, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, for he was filled with many demons. And in Mark 5:9, it says the same thing that Jesus demanded, "What is your name?" And he said, "My name is Legion, because there's many of us." His name is Legion because there were many of him. In this time period, a Roman legion was about 4,500 soldiers. So if this demon is saying that we're a legion, there could be as many as 45 different spirits inside this man, wreaking havoc. It's nuts. The guy has lost everything. They've abandoned him to the tombs because no one can handle him. No one can put up with his antics. No one can deal with him. And they've wrote him off of he's unsavable. He can't be helped. There's nothing more we can do. Verse 31 of Matthew says, though, "So the demons begged him, 'If you cast us out, send us into that herd of pigs.'" Jesus is like, "Okay, go." And it says in Mark goes a little bit more in detail. He says they begged him and they begged him to send him into the pigs. And so he sends them into those pigs, and it says that Jesus gave them permission to go into the pigs, and the evil spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs. And the entire herd of 2,000 pigs plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and drowned in the water. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all record the same thing. That when the demons came out of the man and into the pigs, they all run off the side of the cliff and plunged into the water and drowned. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Right? The demons are begging Jesus not to send them to the abyss, not to send them into the bottomless pit, not to send them away, not to torture them. They're begging him to do that. They're asking him to send him into the pigs because in the pigs, they could still wander and they could still roam. But when the pigs all go off the side of the cliff and drown, many scholars believe that Jesus was the one that kind of shooed the pigs to the cliff, because when they hit the water and drowned, the demons were then trapped in the water, because the Scripture says that God made the water and then he made the land to separate the waters, that it was two different things. And so when they hit the water, they couldn't go anywhere anyways. They're stuck in the water. I don't know that that's right, but there's a lot of theories on it. There were a lot. If you look this up, you're going to find all kinds of stuff. Don't follow those rabbit holes. I'm telling you, you will be lost forever. But the one that held the most weight was the one that they felt like that this was, that it was, that the demons were bound to the pigs, and when the pigs fell into the sea, that the demons were still bound to them in the sea. So they were still trapped. They still sent to the abyss. The 2,000 pigs plunging off the cliff is such a... I mean, that's even more bizarre than the dude howling at the moon. I mean, that's bizarre. Pigs are smart. I've never seen one jump off into a hole. I bet you've never heard about a pig falling in a hole. You've heard about donkeys falling in holes. You've heard about cows falling in a hole. You ain't never heard about a pig falling in a hole. Maybe because nobody wanted to talk about it when their pig fell in the hole. But it's bizarre. And then this whole thing gets crazier. The whole story gets crazier because this guy who's been possessed by demons, who was out of his mind, who was a lunatic, who wouldn't, I mean, just running around naked, howling at the moon, and then Jesus casts out the demons and he becomes sane. He becomes in his right mind. Matthew chapter 8, verse 33, it says, the herdsmen fled, the pig herders fled to the nearby town, telling everyone what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and the entire town came out to meet Jesus, but they begged him to leave. Mark records it too. It says, the herdsmen ran, afraid, and told the townspeople about the demon-possessed man and the pigs, and the crowd began to pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. Luke records it, and he says that they came back and they asked Jesus to leave them alone, for a great wave of fear swept across them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left, crossing back to the other side of the lake. The people get there after this guy is in his right mind, fully clothed and interacting with them. In fact, it says in Luke, it says, a crowd soon gathered around Jesus and they saw the man who had been freed from the demons, and he was sitting at Jesus' feet, fully clothed and perfectly sane. They saw it. Everyone knew this lunatic. Everybody knows the town crazy. Everybody. Even people who don't live in your town know your town crazy. Some of y'all have already thought about who Viola's town crazy is. They might be in this room. But you had someone that immediately popped in your mind that everybody knows who they are. Everyone looks at him and goes, that guy is just a few fries short of a Happy Meal. His elevator doesn't go all the way to the top. Everybody knew who this guy was. And they get there and he's fully clothed and he's in his right mind and he's talking to them. And I'm guessing he's probably apologizing for the craziness that he had no control over. He's interacting like a normal person. It's something you won't and don't find about any other miracle that Jesus performed. Was when the people, the where and how the people reacted this way. You're not going to find that anywhere else in the scripture where they were terrified and told Jesus to leave after he healed them, after he did something in their lives. They see this man in his right mind acting normal, and instead of being full of joy and praising the Lord, they're terrified. They're begging Jesus to leave, to go away, to leave us alone. We were happy with our pet demon. We know that he scared the children, but we were okay with that. We know that he caused us grief, but we were okay with that. We know that he's hurt people, but we were good with it. We don't want what you're selling. And that's the way it seems they're acting. When addicts start getting saved and clean, it doesn't make the dealers happy. And this guy had a legion of demons in him, and Jesus steps on the scene. He saw this man from across the lake, steps on the scene, heals him, delivers him. And the people were upset and mad. Are they mad because Jesus healed the man? No, they're mad because their pigs just jumped in the lake and drowned. And they didn't even eat pig. They had it for the Gentiles. But they're mad about it. We see this again in Acts chapter 16. Verse 16 says, one day as we were going down to the place of prayer, we met a slave girl who had a spirit that enabled her to tell the future. She earned a lot of money for her masters by telling fortunes. She followed Paul and the rest of us shouting, these men are servants of the Most High God, and they have come to tell you how to be saved. And this went on day after day until Paul got so exasperated that he turned and said to the demon within her, I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her. And instantly it left her. Her master's hopes of wealth were now shattered. So they grabbed Paul and Silas and dragged them before the authorities at the marketplace. The whole city is in uproar because of these Jews, they shouted to the city officials. They are teaching customs that are legal to us Romans to practice. A mob quickly formed against Paul and Silas, and the city officials ordered them stripped and beaten with wooden rods. And they were severely beaten, and then they were thrown into prison, and the jailer was ordered to make sure they didn't escape. Verse 37, it says, but Paul replied, we are publicly beaten without a trial, and we are Roman citizens. So now they want us to leave in secret, because the people are like, you got to go, you got to get out of here. Leave. After they beat them and threw them in prison, then they were asking them to leave. But they brought them out of the jail and apologized, and they begged them to leave the city. These people were mad because their meal ticket left. When the girl was set free of the demon, they were thrown in prison, and then begged to leave the city. Paul did exactly what Jesus said, though. He did the same works and cast the demon out of the girl. John 14:12 says, I tell you the truth, anyone who believes in me will do the same works I've done and even greater works because I am going to be with the Father. Paul did the same thing, but he found the same fate. Actually, a little less. They just got Jesus to leave. They beat and imprisoned Paul first, then begged him to leave. The next thing about this story, the last verse, there's something that also happens here that Jesus only does in this story. This is the only place that Jesus tells someone to do this. But Jesus told the man to share what had happened. And most of the one-on-one miracles, he didn't want them to tell what had happened, right? When he heals people and he changes their lives, he was like, don't tell anyone. But this guy, Mark chapter 5, verse 18, it says, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. But Jesus said, no, go home to your family and tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he has been. So the man started off to visit the 10 towns of that region and began to proclaim the great things Jesus had done for him. And everyone was amazed at what he told them. The man begged Jesus to allow him to go with him. But instead, Jesus responded differently than his typical response. Jesus told him to go and tell what had happened. So he went and shared in the 10 towns. See, the people that see demons cast out may not be happy, but the one who is set free of the bondage will want to tell everyone what has happened. He becomes a walking testimony, sharing his story in the Decapolis, the 10 towns. He becomes a missionary because of a miracle. Some of you are still in the storm. Some of you, you're waiting on the storm to get past. You're not even to the shore yet. You've made it to the part where everything changes, but you're still bailing water. But the good news is that Jesus is in the boat with you. And if he says you're going to the other side, you'll make it. Some of you have already come through the storm, and now you're facing spiritual warfare, and you've made it to the shore, but the enemy is waiting. Can I remind you that you serve the one whom demons fear? Maybe you're here this morning and you're like the man in the tombs, bound and isolated, screaming on the inside, and people have written you off, but Jesus sees you. He sees you. He came all the way across the lake just for you. This man didn't just get free that day. He got commissioned. He became a bold witness. And maybe today is the day for you too. Maybe it's not just to get you free, but to step you into something new. Maybe you've been set free, but you haven't told anyone. Maybe you've been keeping it to yourself. Today is commissioning day. Maybe it's time for you to begin to tell others what Jesus has done in your life. Ask everyone that would to stand to your feet. Please don't rush out of here. We're gonna baptize some in just a few minutes. But this is important. Maybe you're here this morning and you say, I'm like that guy. I'm bound. People have written me off because of things that I've done. And I just need Jesus this morning. I need Jesus this morning. I want to invite you to come. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you. I want to believe for freedom for you and with you. Maybe you're here though, and you say, you know what? God did something in my life, but I've not been telling anyone, and I need strength and boldness to be able to tell people what God is doing in my life. I need that commissioning. I want to pray with you. I want to invite you to come because I want to pray with you and believe with you. Sometimes it's about that first step. The hardest step we make in coming to this altar is the first one. And I encourage you that if you're not where you need to be with Him, you're living bound, you're living trapped, you're living addicted. I encourage you to move so we can pray and believe that God will set you free. It's important that we share what God is doing in our lives too. And if you're not, I encourage you to seek the strength to do that. Maybe you're in the middle of the storm though, and you're bailing water and you don't know what to do. You say, I just need God to help me. I want to encourage you to move. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you. Don't miss it this morning. Don't miss it. Don't do it alone. Don't do it alone. Lord, I just thank you right now. I thank you for the ones that responded. And Lord, I know that there are more that need to be here. And Lord, I just pray that you begin to move in their hearts right now and you begin to prompt them even now, God. If you feel led to come and pray for the ones that are here, feel free to do so. If you feel led to come and pray around this altar, feel free to do so. This altar is open.